I often wonder about your motivation in terms of coming back. You know, you played hurling for a long time. You went to go back playing football last year. Like, to make that trip, and I remember Ryan Smith used to do it for Westmeath a few years ago as well, to make it from London back over and maybe to have to race straight after a game to get back to London to be there for work the next day as well. Is it just a love of sport? Is it a love of GAA? What motivates you to actually take that on year after year?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's a few things, I suppose. The biggest one for me, and I kind of always keep telling myself this, and I probably only realise this because I've had to verbalise it to English people here that I work with, because they don't understand it. So it's kind of made me understand why I do it. I suppose the thing is, when I grew up in Portlaoise, I went to watch Portlaoise play, and you know, my mother might bring me to the odd Laois game. So when I was 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, all I want, like my boyhood dream was to play for Portlaoise and Laois. You know, so, you know, when you're 10 years of age and you're writing in your school book, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a policeman, I want to be a fireman, that type of stuff. I'm literally living what I wanted to be when I grew up. Like, I wanted to play for Laois, wanted to play for Portlaoise, so I get to do it. So if I feel if I gave that up now, or, you know, throughout my 20s when I could have transferred over here, I feel I would have been kind of just giving up on what I wanted to be when I grew up. I would have been throwing that away. I would have been letting down the 10-year-old. I suppose, in a way, you know, and that's kind of what I'd say when people in work would ask me, like, well, you're mad. And I was like, yeah, but did you want to be a singer when you grew up? Or did you want to be a teacher? Did you want to be this? And they might say no. And I say, yeah, well, I'm actually what I wanted to be. Like, I'm so lucky to get to do it. So that's one of the things that would drive me, you know.
All the same, though, it must be difficult. Say if a team has had a good win that you're involved in and you know you have to be back for the next day, it's like, crap, I have to chase back to the airport as opposed to going for a pint with the lads.
Horrendous, absolutely horrendous. And that's probably the thing that I find hardest is I'm not with the team during the week, so I feel not lonely or left out. I don't know the word to say, but I don't feel as part of it. I'm not as close to that as I really want to be. I really love being a part of a team and trying to do things. I love going training with teams, and we're going to try win something. If we get there, we get there, but at least we all try together. So I don't get that with the team during the week. And then when I'm at home, I don't get to kind of stay around and savour it a little bit after. I have to leave again. So that would be the bit that kind of, that would be the bit I find hard, that I don't feel as part of it as much as I would like to be a part of it.
In terms of not feeling part of it, I'd imagine last summer must have been very hard for you, because you know, you've been soldiering with the hurling team for a long time. They get to go to Croke Park twice in the summer for the first time in 15 years. They win a Joe McDonagh. They beat Dublin in a big All-Ireland qualifier to get into a quarter-final. To have missed out on all that must have been hard for you.
Yeah, it was. Look, I'm not going to lie here and say, oh, no, it was fine. You know, I was sure devastated. You're not playing anymore. Like, you know, you're out with injury or whatever. And there is always the part of you that's like, oh God, to do it when you're gone and you wish you were there. Like a lot of the time, I find it hard to watch Laois matches, or I find it hard. Last summer, I found it very hard to kind of follow Portlaoise matches. I hated doing it. When I had a cruciate 2 years ago, I was at all the matches because I happened to be home that summer, and I absolutely hated watching the games. I couldn't deal with it. So this year I went away to Italy for the summer. And even then, when the games were on, I had to go and do something while the game was on because I couldn't deal with the anxiety of following the game on Twitter. I just couldn't deal. It was absolutely awful. Like the county final against Killeshan, I got on the bike and I did about a 60k cycle. It took me about 2.5 hours. So I went before the game started and I checked the result when it was over because I just couldn't deal with the... I listened to some of the Port semi-final on the radio. Jack Nolan, I swore never again. No way. not doing it. It's not worth it. I don't know how supporters do it. Like, it's horrendous. It's terrible.
You sound a bit like I don't know if you've seen the movie Moneyball and Billy Bean. That's pretty much exactly what he did. So he can't can't actually watch a baseball game, and he goes off to the gym and tries to do anything to distract himself. I'm guessing you're of a similar mindset then.
I am now. I actually watched that about a month ago. I saw it recently. Yes. That's it. Yeah. I've so much anxiety. I'm so worried the boys will lose. It won't go well. I have to go and do something else.
Coming back from knee injuries as well, not easy. I mean, you've obviously been very unlucky that you come back and then get injured again. Is there any point when any of those have happened in recent years where you've gone, sod this, it'd be much easier for me just to be at home with the missus and the girls and not have to chase after sport?
Not massively until this latest one, because the first the first two knee injuries were down to just bad luck, the way I clashed with players. So, like, I mean, I've clashed and ran into fellas for 20 years and I came out okay. And this time was I clashed them, and whatever way we connected with each other, they fell on my leg the wrong way this time. So I kind of deal with that. This one against Clare, it wasn't a contact one. Someone didn't hit my knee. It was me kind of turning to try run with a player, and the knee kind of wobbled itself, whatever way my foot stuck in the ground. So that was much harder. I was kind of like, oh my God, am I going to go through this rehab again, knowing that my knee probably isn't in very good condition? Whereas before I was like, look, just a bit of bad luck, I'll get back and I'll go again. So this time there was a bit of, oh, I can't face into more rehab, but I'm rehabbing now and I'm enjoying it. Right. Can't wait to get back.
I think you're the first player who's ever said to me they enjoy rehab.
Well, look, it's nice to have a goal, I suppose. Like, Tom Hargreaves is in with Leash there, and Sean Gaffney, the physio, and Dennis Murphy's my physio over here, Mayo guy. They're all very good to me, and I kind of have a program laid out to follow. So once I have a plan to follow, it's not too bad. Sorry, I wouldn't say I like the rehab. It's better having rehab to do than having nothing to do, but I'd definitely prefer to be playing.
It was about, I suppose, about 15, 16 months ago you made the decision to have another go at the football again. How hard a decision was it to decide to go football as opposed to hurling? Was the thinking that you've one more go and you want to just give football a go for a couple of years? Was that the thinking?
That was the exact thinking, yeah. I suppose... I didn't play actual much county football, you know, when it was all told. So I always kind of felt I had a reputation that wasn't deserved. And I kind of felt I need to go back and actually prove it to myself, or, you know, whatever. It had that thing built in my head. So that's why I kind of went back. It killed me to walk away from the hurling, because I love it. I love just playing hurling. It's just brilliant. I think it's great. But yeah, I felt I wanted to go back to county football to see, you know, kind of prove to myself that I could be a county footballer. Obviously, it didn't work out, but I can live with that now that I went back and I gave it a go. It didn't work out.
9 summers ago, I guess your reputation in football was probably built quite a bit on your performance on Bernard Brogan. Is that what you mean in terms of a reputation that was maybe hanging around you?
Yeah, I guess so. It's kind of like I said before, and it's probably the same in other counties. Like, it's probably the same in Offaly, if you will. The good club player who isn't playing with the county, the longer he doesn't play with the county, the bigger his reputation gets. You know, it's all, if we only had him. And I kind of felt there was a little bit of that going on with me, that I was getting a bigger reputation than I ever deserved because I wasn't playing.
Yeah.
So I kind of felt, well, I need to go back and prove that I deserve that. You know, I felt I kind of wanted to prove it to myself. When I look back on my Leash football career, not regrets, but I think I would like to have played a lot more football. But obviously hurling, I couldn't. You know, it's not a regret, but I would have liked to have played more football.
Because whatever about being a dual player, and say you were based at home, say you were teaching in Port Leash, it's maybe vaguely possible. But even now, I think the dual player, it's almost become impossible because of the workload to play both.
Exactly, and the way the fixtures are as well. Sure, there's clashing fixtures all the time. It just makes it untenable. You know, you could potentially manage it. You could manage it physically, but with fixtures on the same weekend, sometimes they're clashing on the same day, it means logistically it's even impossible. Even if you were a good enough player to be able to keep your hurling in top nick, your football in top nick, logistically it just doesn't work now. Such are the demands.
The love of Port Leash and going back to continue playing club football and hurling each summer, is the fact that Port Leash have been so successful over the last 15 years, has that been a large part of it, or would that love have still been there even if you were getting knocked out in quarterfinals?
Someone asked me this question recently. It's hard to know. I suppose it's hypothetical, because I'm trying to imagine if we weren't competing, would I still do it? And I'd like to say the answer is yes. I think it wouldn't have made a difference, because I've never kind of made, you know, every year there's kind of, is this the year I transfer to London? Is this the year? And it was never a case of, do I think we'll win something? And I said, yes, oh, I'll stay. Like, that kind of thought never really crossed my mind. It was kind of like, do I want to play with Port Leash and Leash? Yes. Okay, well, I'm playing with Port Leash and Leash then. It was never, do I have a chance of winning something?
Hmm. Because there is something about the town that kind of carries outside. I was chatting to TJ Donnie a few weeks ago, and like you, I think hurling is probably his first love as opposed to football. He's saying if he'd stayed in Portlaoise, he probably would have been a corner forward in hurling. But like, can we talk to Zach, too, he at any stage as well, even while he's at Geelong, he still has a lot of love for Portlaoise, and he's doing a fundraiser for Do It For Dan and stuff as well. There's something about Portlaoise that seems to carry even when you guys go to foreign soils then.
Yeah, probably TJ is my age group on the hurling. I hurled with TJ.
Was he any good?
I wasn't bad. Yeah, he was nippy. He was decent left footer in soccer as well. He was same age as me in soccer too. lost my train of thought. The town thing. There probably is a little bit of, because Laois is very rural, so like we're not really close to many other towns. There's probably that little bit of we're townies and the country lads would see us as soft townies and we're like bog men from the country type thing. I remember being on, it'd be a laughing joke. I'd be trying to talk to some of the Laois hurlers down the back of the bus and they could be talking farming or, any some sort of manual work, out in the countryside or tractors and diggers. And sure, I wouldn't have a clue. Like I'd learn the name of a type of cow and throw it into a conversation, and sure they'd start laughing at me because they know right well I don't have a clue. Like, what would the townie know about this? So there's probably a little bit of that in where Zach coming from, TJ, that type of thing.
That sounds like a conversation you probably had with Ross King and maybe Paddy Purcell. People of that.
I do ask Keith Murphy on the four Laois hurlers the names of the cows so I can throw them in with the county lads.
In terms of the rest of the year, I mean, you've been pretty outspoken about your belief that maybe the balance is wrong between intercounty and club. I just kind of wonder at the moment, Cara, given that intercounty probably won't happen after this kind of 5,000 ruling until at least the end of August, we're probably not going to have an intercounty season. Has there ever been a better opportunity for the GA to actually sit down and have a proper look at the calendar now?
Probably never a better opportunity to have the time to evaluate this thing and really sit down and say, where do we want the association to go? What are we actually about? What's our modus operandi here? Like, what do we want? If we were to pick a utopia GAA, what is that and how do we get there? They have the time now to decide to do that. I guess what that is, I don't know. And I think that's the biggest problem, that we're ambling along and we're just being swept downstream and we're seeing where it takes us. That's the way I feel, like big sponsor might come in. All right, well, let's do that. Or county managers have wanted to do more, spend more money. And the county has turned into a juggernaut, not by any planning, just by the way things have progressed and it's fallen that way. I don't see... They probably need to use this time to sit down and say, what's the utopia here? How do we get there? What do we want the GAA to be? At the minute, I feel we're just going along. We're drifting as an association.
I appreciate this is a very open question, but what's a utopia GAA for Cara Healy then?
A utopia GAA for me would be, it's very open-ended. It's hard. See, this is, I suppose, the thing, and maybe I shouldn't be as critical of the hierarchy because it's a hard thing to pin down. I would just look at it and I would think, we've 10 teams in Liam McCarthy and then there's 6 in the John McDonough. And I mean, outside of that, hurling is practically non-existent in 2/3 of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be fair?
No, I think once you go north to Mullingar, with the exception of Antrim as being an outlier, it really is football country from there up.
Yeah, like, I mean, I believe there's one hurling club in Fermanagh. I'm not sure how many Donegal have. Cavan didn't have a senior hurling team, so there's probably only 2 or 3 clubs there. Longford, I think, are maybe around the 4 mark. Even Carlow are at the 4 senior hurling club mark.
Hmm.
So I think the strength of the GAA needs to be judged on that, kind of how strong the club scene is and participation, like particularly in hurling, up around there. As regards what the utopia for me would be, I think I'm on record as saying that I think everyone should be a club player and the county should be representative. That you go in and you play with your county when the county games are on and you spend all your time with the club and you're part of that club and you're part of that community. So that would be my kind of take on it.
You're looking at a radical flip then in terms of the actual time that will be spent at each then, because you're almost flipping that over, because at the moment it's pretty well known that many club players aren't seen until nearly championship starts.
Yeah, I think it needs to be. I think it needs to be flipped completely the opposite way. I think county players not being with their clubs takes too much out of the club, and I don't see what the benefit is of players being exclusively there with their county for 8 months a year and never being with their clubs. I appreciate the arguments that that's what draws in the money, that draws in the crowds, that draws in the sponsorship, which is all so important for us to do, you know, to have coaches, to put in initiatives for supplying helmets to clubs, hurleys, whatever it may be, infrastructure, all that stuff. But does that money disappear if Cathair Healy and Michael Verney or whoever aren't training with the county team until the week of a game? Do Super Value pull the sponsorship because, well, Cathair Healy isn't in the gym every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 7, and he's not with the team at a team meeting for 4 hours on a Saturday and three times a week on the field. Like, I don't think AIG are sponsoring Dublin because Kieran Kilkenny trains six times a week. I would say they're sponsoring it because the Dublin County football team is so well supported. They're on TV. They're successful. Let's sponsor them and get our brand name out there. Like, the supporters will still go to the county games. People will still watch the county games on telly. I'm pretty sure nobody is tuning in to county games because they say, "Jeez, aren't those boys great? Don't they do so much training? Let's go down and watch them." They go down because they're from that county and they want to support that county, and they buy the jerseys because they're from there. The training, the amount of training that county teams put in, I don't think is driving the support and driving the money.
Well, the argument to be made as well, that probably training and the amount of training that's going on at the moment hasn't necessarily made the game a much better spectacle than it was anyway. You know, given that guys can maybe do a dash in a quicker time than they were previously, or guys have got more muscles than they did 10 or 15 years ago, doesn't necessarily reflect itself that the game is more enjoyable to watch on the field.
That's subjective, I think, is it? Or is that, am I using the right one? Subjective and objective. I always get those wrong. You know, whether someone says that was a brilliant game or that was a terrible game, I think that's just opinion. So, but I would agree with you. I don't see how 30 million spent on county teams is what is drawing in the other 50 million to support the GA, or 200 million to support the GA, whatever the figures are. I don't see the correlation with it. Like, the money that is spent on, you know, the amount of gear county lads have and et cetera, et cetera, or, you know, the amount of money it takes to prepare a county team. I don't see how that money results in the other money coming back.
Yeah,
I can see how the county game draws that in. So that's why it should always be a big part of our calendar. And I don't think shortening the season from January to June and having no county onwards, I think that's a bad decision, because then you are taking away what brings in money. I think they should be able to run concurrently. That county, you can run the All-Ireland to its conclusion in September and have all the media coverage of it, but while people still play with their clubs and have regular games with their clubs all through that time.
I assume as well, when it comes to the money side of things over the next while, people are going to probably have to have a look at this, because I think 60 million is the kind of estimated figure at the moment if, say, the championship wasn't to be played, or if it was to be delayed way late into the year. That's a lot of money probably missing for counties who also aren't fundraising at the moment. There's no county lottos on at the moment. There's no matches taking place. I would imagine probably next year, the kind of big payments out to managers and, you know, big costs for team preparation are probably going to come down quite a bit.
Probably so, yeah. I that's a big thing, and I've said it before that it must be awful to be a county board secretary or treasurer or something, because the financial pressure some of them must be under to finance county squads. I don't envy it, you know, and I don't want to seem like a hypocrite here, because I love playing county football, playing county hurling. I love being a part of a team that takes it so serious and trains so much and has the meetings and the video analysis and measures all the GPS. I love that, and I really want to be part of it. I'm just speaking openly of what I think the GA should be. And unfortunately, what the GA should be would probably mean I get less support individually and I get to achieve my potential less. But I'm trying to think of the bigger picture, if that would say. So I'm a little bit hypocritical, I guess, in what I'm saying. But I'm just trying to that's just my vision of what the GAA should be, I guess.
I suppose at the risk of sounding like a socialist, in many ways, whatever counties have the most money, it almost naturally follows they will have more GDA is around, they will have more money to pump into coaching. They're going to have more money for team preparation at the elite level as well. We could easily get into a position whereby in 10 years time or even in 2 years time, and maybe it's the case already, where the teams who are raising the most money and spending the most money on coaching and development are going to be cast iron as the top few teams in the country.
It's looking that way. And then, you know, you hear these things come out in the media, suggestions about like counties joining together, and
That'll never work.
A disaster. Like, I mean, sure, the county game is amazing. Like, it's amazing that you represent your own small county like Leash or Offaly or Westmeath or wherever it be. That's a brilliant thing. Like, it'd be a terrible thing if we destroyed that, if we started joining Leash and Offaly just to compete better with Dublin, or if you joined Clare and Limerick just to compete more with Kerry. That'd be a dreadful thing. So you do have a point there that it's becoming a runaway train. Like, it's becoming an arms race. And I don't think that's what the GA as a whole should be about. Well, I love being part of the arms race, don't get me wrong, because yeah. I love all that training. I love putting on the GPS before, measure it. You're not working hard enough. Your top speed is too slow, or you didn't cover enough distance, whatever it may be, and everything's measured, and you know you need to rest tonight because your heart rate's too high in the morning, or all that stuff. I love it, and I'm grateful for it. But that's my utopia GA, I guess.
It's not an easy life, though, because I remember I was chatting to some of the players before the O'Byrne Cup and the Walsh Cup this year, and we were chatting in the middle of November with guys getting ready to play in the last week of November for matches. Is that actually enjoyable? I know you say you enjoy everything, but you know, you've just saved for a lot of lads who just come out of club a few weeks beforehand and they're getting ready to play a pre-season competition on the last week of November, and in all likelihood they're going to play for 11 or 12 months if their county and club do well. That's like more than Premier League footballers do. Like, at least in the Premier League you get 2 months off.
Yeah, I see the argument there. I guess what it is, that's a very individual thing, because some people might find that pressure. Some people find the constant having to be at a certain place at a certain time, they can find that pressurized. Whereas, you know, for me personally, me going training is my social thing. Like, I've missed weddings and stags and all that, and it doesn't cost me a second thought because I just love being in the dressing room with lads and all my steam is blown off there. So it's kind of, that one is a very individual one that wouldn't be across the board that that's too much. But I can see how it is too much for people having to be in certain places all the time. To be fair to county managers, I think they are trying to address that with probably when weight started to come in with county teams, we were all having to come down from Dublin to do them. Whereas now, you know, you're in your pods or your satellites or wherever, you do the weights where you are to take the pressure off, or get your weights done today, whatever time suits you, you know, before work, after work, lunchtime is fine. So I think county managers do recognize the amount of hours needed to put in, and I think they're trying to make that as less pressurized as they can.
Yeah, I suppose that flexibility is important.
Flexible is the word, yeah.
For a lot of lads, though, I suppose, especially for young lads I see going into county panels, you know, you got the pressure of eating absolutely correctly, training perfectly, cutting down on the socializing probably to an absolute minimum in terms of the amount of drink or going out with your mates and so on as well. It's a lot of pressure to put on a young lad when he goes onto a county panel. You're effectively a professional without the payment or recovery for being a professional.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and again, it's an individualised thing. There could be one 19-year-old absolutely thrives in it, loves it, can't get enough of it. But then there's another 19-year-old who he might be able to go to that training at 7 and drop his exam worries. They mightn't leave him when he's going training. So it mightn't be a release for him. He might feel more pressure doing that. So on an individual basis, I do see how that environment could be pressure on a lot of them. The time commitment compared to how much time we have.
Away from the Gaelic entirely, how's it been over in England? Because we're kind of reading over here a very different experience, a much slower reaction, first of all, in terms of COVID-19. You're a teacher. The schools are very slow to close over there as well. What was your feeling over the last 5 or 6 weeks or so, the experience of being in England during all this?
Disbelief. I mean, I've about... How long are we off school? 4 weeks. I'd say for the past 3 weeks, I've deliberately avoided the news. I've avoided their press conferences in the evening because I was following it really closely. But then some of the things I heard, I was just like, I can't be watching this anymore. I buried my head in the sand a lot the last 3 weeks. To be honest with you, I was following it very closely, and now I've buried it because You had Boris coming out bragging that he was shaking people's hands when the medical advice all over the world was wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. And he was coming out bragging he was shaking his hands in hospitals with coronavirus patients. He had one of his other briefings, I think it was the third one. He asked the reporters, maybe we won't do these anymore. I don't know. Are you getting bored? Are they useful? He asked him. And the journalist was like, well, yes, they are very useful. And he was like, oh, well, we'll continue. So on. I was like, you're prime minister of the country in the largest pandemic in 100 years here. And you're asking, are these briefings useful? It was just beyond belief, you know.
As well, it seems kind of scary to me the way the information is being transmitted too. I was looking at the Financial Times earlier today, and kind of the official figures are somewhere like 19,500 as we talk at the moment. They'll probably go up by the end of today. But the Financial Times are claiming it could be closer to 42,000. So it's very difficult to know what figures to actually believe here.
Yeah, and that's so disappointing, because what's to be gained here by telling lies? Like, you're playing with people's lives just to, I don't know, keep your position in government or win the next election in 4 years. That's really, really disappointing. You're wanting people to follow social distance and guidelines, but if you're underplaying the actual figures, why are they going to take it as seriously as they should? Do you know?
Your partner and her kids are Italian as well. You mentioned being in Italy last year. Was it scary around the house when initially we started to get the reports from Italy a month ago?
Yeah. Her family have all been fine, thank God. Over in Italy, they're down kind of in Rome, so around the middle of the country, which hasn't been as hit as much as the north. But my partner would certainly be very conscious of it. I have to give her credit, even though I probably cause a few arguments because she's getting me to wash my hands so much. And if I go out to the shop, you know, I'm almost hosed down before I come in and that type of thing. So I've probably been a bit unfair there, but she's certainly very diligent about it. She's, you know, looking at Italy in her home country and seeing the amount of deaths and the destruction it's caused there.
Yeah.
So certainly a worrying time for her. Yeah, she's very conscious about it. And now there's talk of the schools going back. You know, it's kind of, we've only been locked down for 4 weeks and there, you know, there seems to be a push in the media, or people are putting these thoughts out there that we can restart schools gradually now already type of thing. And
as a teacher, would you feel safe doing that?
I don't know what I feel safe. I mean, I don't want to do it unless, I mean, I don't want to go back to school unless every other shop is opening up as well. You know, our head teacher said today that we shouldn't be used as guinea pigs here to reopen the country. Why are teachers being used as guinea pigs? It should be either it's safe for everyone to go out or it's not safe. I guess, do you know, does that make sense? It shouldn't be, oh, here, send in a few kids with a few teachers and see does it get worse.
Well, look, I would think, you know, all the World Health Organization guidelines are that children can carry with little or no symptoms. So there's that strong possibility a child comes into a classroom, catches COVID-19, brings it back home where maybe they're in contact with granny, and then that's when you've got the problems.
That's exactly it. It's exactly it. And I suppose you hear things about opening schools gradually or staggered start times. So kids are coming in from 9 to 12 and then 12 till 3. And that's all fine in theory, but that is going to cause absolute havoc with parents and their jobs. You know, like over here, the children of key workers are still going into school. And they're just, it's basically childcare. So how does that work then when, you know, oh, well, your kid is in now from 9 till 12. Like, that could cause more trouble with parents with their own job than it would be if the school was open full time. So I don't think they've thought the logistics of staggered school times through fully.
And in terms of rehab, you're obviously in the middle of getting the knee back to full 100% again. When you are back fully fit, and if you're well enough to do a marathon, you're probably getting there. Is the intention to give Mike Quirk a shout at that stage, even if it is going into 2021, and to go back in to kick football again?
Yeah, well, I was joking with the lads. I said we might have to set up another GoFundMe for another new knee after this this marathon is done. Well, the marathon, as regards the knee, it won't affect it because it'll be all jogging slowly in a straight line. It's the cutting and the really hard, fast, sharp stuff that's the risk with your knee. Certainly for 2021, I don't know. For 2020, I'm a Laois player. So if there is Port Laois football, hurling or Laois football, I'm certainly going to be making myself available for the rest of the year anyway. For what 2020 holds, I don't know. I did say that before I finish playing, I will try play with London or I will try, like my future is over here in London. So I would like to give back to them before I'm completely useless or before I have the knees amputated or whatever, or before they're completely gone, before I get a knee replacement.